Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. So glad you're joining me. This evening it's going to be an open mic hour, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, please do so, 253-582-5597. Well, one of the things I wanted to start off with this evening was a thought, and you know what? I came across some information about a woman we all know about, and her name is Dolly Parton. And I came across this commentary about her. This is a woman that just is never going to turn off or turn down the opportunity to be able to make a new song. But her husband passed away recently. And Dolly has been someone that has accomplished so much in her life. It's just really quite amazing. And I came across her story, and I thought, you know, this is something where many times we wonder, how did a person get to where they are? We can even go back into history. I think of something I watched just a short time ago about Florence Nightingale. And there's always been a fascination on my part with people, where they started, how they got to where they were. What did they have to go through? What did they give up to achieve what they wanted to achieve? If they had failures, what were those failures like? What was it that made them realize that they had found their niche? I'll use that description. And with Dolly, she had that niche established even when she was a little tiny person. But there was a quote that someone said, "You've got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you going to make a dream come true?" That is out of South Pacific. And that movie is just absolutely amazing. But when Dolly was asked about her story, what was it that made her recognize that she really was doing what her own deep soul spirit was calling her to do? And I had to chuckle when I came across a statement that she made. She said, "Music probably will be the same thing that sustains her just like it did in everyday life from the time she was a child." She said, "In the time when I'm too old for sex, not quite ready to meet God." So she plans on living a very, very long time. But she said, even before she could talk, she was playing music. She found it easy to create rhyme and rhythm. And she said anything that had a rhythm, whether it be a bird call or anything else, she said, "I could make a song that would go with it." And the Bob White was one of her favorites when she was a child. And she said, "I could even listen to the rhythm that my mother had when she was snapping beans." Now, Bob, you know, she came from the Appalachian Ozark area, and it was a very tough life. It was not an easy life, but music was the one thing that just made her life really, really rich. And everything around her spoke to her in rhythm, in music, in expression of all levels. And she said, it was just something that was calling to her in a very, very deep way. And she had an uncle. She said it was Uncle Louie. And she began to, when she was little, she would beat out rhythms or she would sing. And this was very important to her. Well, again, her Uncle Louis began to notice what she really was doing all the time. And she was one that didn't hesitate to stand up and to belt out whatever she felt like belting out. And he said, "Okay, you want to learn." So he got her a guitar. And he got her an old Martin guitar, and she learned from him very, very quickly. She learned the basic chords, and she said, "Oh, this was great." Well, she would hear music in her head. And she said, my whole family on my mama's side, they just loved music. And they would give her all kinds of tips. They would share with her whatever they knew. And she said her daddy, as she called him, wanted her to work in the fields with him, but that didn't work out too well. She didn't volunteer for duty very often. And eventually he gave up because it was really important to her, the music. She said she would sit up on top of a woodpile playing music and singing just as loudly as she could. And she used, she said, a tobacco stake, and she'd stick it in the cracks between the boards on the front porch. And she put a tin can on top of the tobacco stake, and that was her microphone. And the porch was her stage. She would perform for anyone at any time, and she just loved doing it. And often she was asked, as she got older, to be a babysitter for kids. Well, she felt she had an audience there, and they had no choice, but they had to listen to her perform. She said, a two-year-old's attention span is not very long. So she said, I would be in the middle of my act, and my audience would start crawling away. She was so desperate at a very young age to perform that she said, more than one time, I sang for our chickens, the pigs, and the ducks. She said they didn't applaud much, but with the aid of a little corn, they could be counted to hang around for a while. Her sense of humor, her willingness to deal with where she was, and she never gave up on what she was doing. So eventually she would start performing for other people. But her big dream was to sing at the Grand Old Opry. But people just said, Dolly, no. It's just not going to happen. You're too young. It just isn't going to happen. She was determined. Now, at the time when she wanted to be on the Grand Old Opry, she said there was no way she was going to get a slot on the program. But she was performing a particular Saturday night, and there was a man by the name of Jimmy C. Newman who said, you know what? You're good. I want you to go on in my place. She said, that was really something. Even though her wish to be on the Grand Ole Opry was given because he was willing to give up his spot one Saturday evening and let her sing, she said it really hadn't sunk in. It just wasn't in her head that this really was happening. Now she went backstage, she was prepared, and she was just being her effervescent self as usual. When Johnny Cash introduced her, he said, we've got a little girl here from up in East Tennessee. Her daddy's listening to the radio at home, and she's going to be in real trouble if she doesn't sing tonight. So let's bring her out here. That's when it really hit her. She was actually going to sing at the Grand Ole Opry. And it was like, wow, people all over the country are going to hear me. I'm in the big time. Now, she said she walked up to the microphone. Remember the one she had on her front porch with the tobacco stick and the tin can? Uh-huh. Well, she said, for a split second, I was a tourist. I looked at that mic. She said it was the same one I'd seen in so many photographs when the press were interviewing people at the Grand Ole Opry. And she said, I'm standing on the same stage in the same place. And Johnny Cash was here just a few seconds ago introducing me. She said, me, little Dolly Rebecca Parton from Locust Ridge. Well, someone had a camera, and it was the old-fashioned ones with the flash in it. That got her out of this mental journey she was going through. And she said nobody was going to hold her back. She looked around, looked at the lights, smiled at people in the audience, and then let it loose. She said, I sang for God, my mama, and my daddy. She said, I sang for everybody who ever believed in me. Somehow, I believed in me, and I guess it showed in my voice. When she finished that first song up at the Grand Ole Opry, the audience absolutely stood up and cheered her. She said, never before in my life had I seen 2,000 people in one place. Never. And she said, I had never heard a crowd cheer, shout, and clap that way. She said, I got 3 encores. She said, this time I was prepared for an encore, but not 3. And someone afterwards, when all of that sort of died down and the show continued, they said to her, you know what, Dolly, you were out on that stage, and you look like you were out there saying, here I am, this is me. She said, I was. She said, not just to that audience, but to the whole world, and she said, I've been doing the same thing ever since. I think when you find out what really lifts your heart, your spirit, brings you joy, when you find that, just like Dolly, it's an amazing thing. Now, actually, you end up being in a positioning in one way or another. And someone might say, gee, all of what happened to her, she was lucky, it was serendipitous, but it's more than that. There was that within her, the intent, and she pursued what was calling to her, deep down in her very soul. And that, I think, is what so many times people turn off, maybe because of criticisms, etc. But I'll share another bit of a story with you because it has to do with radio broadcasting. There was a man, Clay Huntington, and he owned a station here in Lakewood, Washington. It wasn't a big station, but he started the radio broadcasting many, many years ago. Clay died about 14 years ago, and he was in his 80s when he passed away, so he had been in broadcasting for most of his life. I will never forget someone telling me how Clay, when he was on the farm here in the state of Washington growing up, he would pretend he had a microphone in his hand, and he was making announcements about sports. That is what he was doing. He'd get up on top of the chicken coop in his farm, so he wasn't the only one that used chickens for his audience. Dolly doesn't have a margin on that one. But it was amazing to me when I heard that, and I said, really? They said, oh, yeah. He would talk to them about how when he was growing up, he loved sports. In fact, they have a street named after him here in the Lakewood-Tacoma area of Washington, and there is a baseball field that really he was at every game that was ever put on. He supported sports of any size, shape, and color. He just absolutely loved sports, and that is what he did. He wanted to be in that world, the sports environment, and he wanted to be able to broadcast. When he was growing up, it was, as we would call it today, the golden era of radio, because there was no television when he was growing up. He didn't have any TV. That wasn't available for a long period of time during his life experience. And so he entered into the world of broadcasting, and again, just like Dolly, would broadcast to the chickens. So when the opportunity came up for him when he was in school and even afterwards, he did it and ended up owning what ended up being the last independent radio station in the state of Washington. And he had been the owner of that station for many, many years. And even with his station, the focus was on sports, Cheney Stadium, anything that had to do with the different organizations, he was right there, right there. And that was his passion. So when I found out about Dolly's story, and then I thought about Clay, I hadn't thought about this for quite a while, and I thought how interesting it is when you find people that from the time that they could even imagine doing something, they were already acting out what is most meaningful to them. And sometimes we forget that part of ourselves. We forget that part of ourselves that absolutely adored something, excelled in a certain arena. And maybe life's practical applications come around, hard times hit, maybe you have to work at a job you don't like. But when you find that which calls to you, you become so much richer as a person. And life becomes something that is more engaging. And I don't care if that's with art, if it's police work, being a fireman, being a nurse, a doctor, an investigator. There's so many ways we can put our talents to work. And it's fascinating how we're able to evolve into that. And I don't know about you, but I can remember doing different jobs because I had a child to raise and I had to be able to support myself. So this is something that when I think of all of the different experiences that I went through, different jobs, different people, before I found my niche. Actually, I didn't find it. My mentor was the one that told me about it. And it's been a process ever since. And when I was asked by someone, if you could do anything, what would you do? Instantly, I said, my psychic work. They said, do it. I said, no. I don't know of anybody that's successful in it. They said, that's not you. You can be successful with it. And it's been a passion of mine ever since. Why? I don't know. All I know is that it brings me such joy to be able to work with people, be in the environments where I'm able to teach, do talks, and I evolved into broadcasting, not because I sought it out, but because somebody in broadcasting and television, in fact, asked me to be on their show, and it progressed from there. You just never know where your talents are going to find a home. And your age doesn't make any difference. Many times people will find their niche like Dolly did when she was very young and like Clay Huntington. Other times people like Grandma Moses may not find it until they're in their 90s. But they still can find it. And I'm just amazed at how life has so many variables to it. Oh, and speaking of variables, by the way, the newsletter is going to be going out, and you'll have it in your email box tomorrow. And one of my, the heading of my editorial is Dark Ages and Renaissance. So that is what my theme is. Remember, you can explore life. When you look at generations in the past, and I think particularly of the Cultural Revolution. When that occurred in China, teachers, people that had education, many of them were murdered, and others were put out in fields to do all kinds of work. They weren't to educate anymore. They weren't able to do what they loved to do. They were forced to work in horrible, horrible conditions and situations. And if they fought against it, they usually were shot or sent to God knows where so that they would rot and die. This was a very, very difficult time for a lot of people. When the Cultural Revolution ended, there was an opportunity, and this was back in the 90s, for the Chinese government to send an exhibition to many different countries, and it happened to come to Seattle. And when I was in the exhibition, they had a building that was actually put together. It was disassembled for shipping and put together here. that showed how the Chinese had centuries ago had learned how to build so that the buildings wouldn't collapse from earthquakes, because China experiences a lot of earthquakes throughout their history. It has been something they've had to contend with in a big time. And they're a very inventive people. Their cultural civilizations hold so much that we're even still learning about today. And many of their techniques during the Cultural Revolution were lost. I had the occasion to talk with one of the attendants that accompanied this marvelous exhibition that came in. And there was a group of silk paintings. Now, when I say silk paintings, they were actually done with very, very fine, finer than a hair, threads of silk. And I was in awe of the skill of the stitchery, but I was in awe even more when I saw a display, and it was in a beautiful, beautiful red lacquered frame. And the young lady showed me, she went and she flipped it. On one side, there was this exquisitely, beautifully, beautifully embroidered woman in a costume of a particular province. Absolutely exquisitely done. You almost expected it to come out, to have the image come alive in front of you. The image was flipped over, and on the other side, there was an image of a tiger. Do you know that stitchery, that skill? There used to be hundreds of people that were able to do it. Women primarily did it. Some men did, but primarily it was the women because of their small fingers and their capacity for doing this extraordinarily difficult stitching so that you would have the one image, like of the tiger, but it would never show itself when you flip to the other side, which was of a beautiful young woman in Chinese historical garb. And I found out from her that after the Cultural Revolution, there was one woman in the entire country of China, and it's a big country, one woman who had survived the revolution that knew the skill. And at the time they had this exhibit, this woman was teaching students in China the old art that she was so skilled at doing. So that knowledge is being passed on. And many times, that is what people who have had skills that maybe in the modern world might consider useless. But I happened to be in San Jose, California, on a business trip a few years ago. This was before COVID hit. I was on a business trip, and there was an art exhibition that was in a couple of blocks from where I was staying. I end up going, and I saw as part of the art exhibition a full display of this kind of skill that was passed along. This is not done by machine. Not at this time. They may invent a machine that will be able to do with artificial intelligence what this elder lady was teaching students in the 90s to do by hand. That may happen. But the artistry that I saw was breathtakingly beautiful. And it was a woman from, I believe, China that was doing it, but she was employing people from China to do it for her, and the artistry was just spectacular. The reason I bring it up is because there are times in history when knowledge is just thrown out the door. It is burned, it is destroyed. We can come into the modern era, as we like to describe it, and there will be people like Pol Pot, Idi Amin, Stalin, Hitler. There are so many in the 20th century. And even today, look at what's happening in the Ukraine and even with Russia. You have things that are being destroyed that should not have been destroyed. But this is what people do. And they destroy the skills people that have the skills, I should say. But all of this is something that will survive one way or the other. And to me, that is something that's very, very special. And when we have a skill, an artistry, and we're able to, in whatever way, pass that knowledge along to the upcoming generation. I don't care if you're a plumber, if you're a waitress, if you are a CEO of a company, we all can share the knowledge that we attain with those that maybe want to carry forth what we know and even refine it better. That's what any good teacher wants. We might be able to teach what we know at the level that we're in, but we want to know if we're a teacher. We want to know that those that we interact with are aware that they can take whatever it is we share with them and make it grow, polish it up in a way and manner that is going to just absolutely shine. That's what teachers do. And that is why a teacher is so valuable, especially if they are committed and dedicated to what is most meaningful to them. And that is being able to empower in one way or another with the knowledge that their lifetime brought forth so that they can pass it along to others. It is something that is extraordinarily rewarding. Grandpas do it with their grandkids. But sometimes we also get a dose of what a generation may think is the best way to do something. And sometimes it's up to the younger generation to say, how about trying a different way? Let's see which way is going to work best. It's so intriguing to me. And sometimes we can be, when we're older, we can be stick in the muds. But one way or the other, we're going to have to acknowledge when times change, we have the opportunity to grow into a new part of ourself. And that's what a lot of seniors have been finding out in the past 20 years. Not only are we living longer, but my goodness, we just don't want to give up either. There's too much to learn. There's so much to do. So no matter what age you are, no matter who you are, no matter where you are on this planet, life is an expression that you have an opportunity to grow into a bigger and better part of yourself. And that is richness that nobody can ever take away from you. And it's something that empowers others as well. And I think when we can have that general disposition, there's really not any place for pettiness or jealousy, although I know it will show up in life in many different forms. But the truth is, why waste your time with something like that? When you can learn from someone else, be willing to grow and expand in your own way. And don't try to shove your knowledge down somebody's throat. Guaranteed, they're not going to be able to listen to it or absorb it anyway. But just be yourself. Be the best you possibly can be. And you will find that not only are you going to have a very, very rich life, but you may end up empowering others that cross your path in such a wonderful way that they will perhaps come back and thank you. Or you will meet somebody that knew them that said, because of you, this person took a different path and they made a good life because of what you shared with them. You never know. Just be the best you can be, and you will find not only do you continue growing, because we can always learn how to do something better, but not only will you grow, you're going to be able to shine. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 253-582-5597. This is an open mic hour, and I've got more good things to share with you. Don't go away. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Well, The Donna Sebo Television Show Special Editions, we are going to start filming in August, and I will let you know when the next show is finished and will be aired both on my television channel, my video channel on YouTube, as well as on my website. So that is going to be coming up. And yes, tomorrow is the 1st of August. This is the last show of the month of July. Tomorrow we celebrate the beginning of August, and it is going to be a very dynamic month, as always. And also, I want you to know that if you are someone that has a friend who's an author, or you would like to know about being a part of the television programming, then, and, you know, we've already talked about the radio show, but if you wanted to be a part of the television show, send me an email. Go to my website, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the contact page. Send me an email. Give me your contact information, including your phone number. Sometimes it's so much quicker for me to call people. But send me a copy of your publication, and then I will send you, if you send me an email, I will send you the protocols on the television show. So I wanted to mention that. Also, check out the Author Showcase, where we have authors that have helped to support this programming. You can go in, tap on the links, and you'll be connected directly to the radio programming as well as to the television programming if they've been featured on my TV show. Also, next Wednesday, the 6th of August, I will be doing the keynote talk at the Psychic Spectrum, and I am going to also be doing some demonstrations while I'm there. So if you can't come on out to the Poodle Dog, for those of you in Washington, come out to the Poodle Dog restaurant. We are in the banquet room there. The doors open at 5 o'clock, and we will be talking about all kinds of things, but I look forward to seeing you there. So I probably will be speaking around 6. That is what I think the time frame is. So just know that you're more than welcome. And before school starts, this is a good time just to be able to interact. And I will, again, be there for the evening and will be able to interact with you if you so desire. So saying that, and we've got a lot that I want to share with you this evening. One of the very important aspects that has been significantly beneficial to me as an adult, and I find the information fascinating, is nutrition. And dependent on your genetic background, certain foods might be better for you than other foods. And this has been a research area that is relatively new. Because for so long, especially here in the United States, there were, quote-unquote, the government recommendations. And if you've lived long enough, you've gone through the pyramid of this, that, or the other. And also, there has been corrections that have made. For example, with eggs. You were told, don't eat eggs, they promote cholesterol, and they don't do anything like that. Eggs are one of the most compact protein foods that you could ever want to eat. And it is something that really works very well for a lot of people. There's a small group of people that are allergic to eggs. Sometimes it's the yolk, sometimes it's the white, sometimes it's the whole egg. But the allergy is very, very real. So they cannot have eggs. But there are so many aspects of nutrition that we have because of the refinement of technology in the arenas of medicine. Nutrition, there's more and more information that is coming out. And there is a nutrient. And if you're like me, you are always interested in nutrition because your nutritional needs are going to change as you grow as a human being. The nutritional needs of a baby might just be a little nano drop of this, that, or the other. And there is so much that we may need as we are growing older, as our body goes through the different shifts and changes that age brings. And there's another factor that we've become more knowledgeable about, and that is the digestive system. We have learned that many times, as people get older, the digestive system is not absorbing nutrients. And I can remember reading information, 20, 30 years ago, about how some people, because their digestive systems had become so compromised, that taking liquid vitamins rather than the pills works better for them. And so sometimes they were recommended, especially if they were seniors, to take children's vitamin supplementations, which would come in liquid form. And it worked beautifully. Why? Because of the way the body operated. Well, one of the nutrients that's given some attention, but not a heck of a lot, but there is a pharmacist. Pharmacists are chemists. Susie Cohen is one of those pharmacists. And she put out a book called Drug Muggers, because when you're taking medicine and you're taking supplements, they can cause problems for each other. Again, we're dealing with chemistry. Well, one of the nutrients that Susie talked about was selenium, and it's a trace mineral. You don't need buckets of it, but it is very important when it comes to the thyroid gland. And the thyroid gland affects so much in the body. It affects your metabolism, energy, mood, and my goodness, I know of men that are taking a thyroid supplementation. Generally, it's expected that women will as they get older. And this is something, selenium, when it's in the diet, is very important. Now, let's talk about food for a minute. What is it that you can eat that is going to provide selenium? One of those food components, actually, is eggs. Walnuts, tuna, swordfish, herring, shrimp, mullets, soybeans, corn, wheat, rice, chicken, cheese, turkey, beef, oatmeal, vegetables. Brazil nuts have the highest concentration of selenium per gram. Now, it's not easy to find Brazil nuts, but when you can find them, if you find them in the shell, which often when I was a kid, that was something that would come out at Christmas time, that in the stores you could go in and you could buy almonds in the shell. Everything was in the shell. So you could do that. It's not that easy to find it at this time, but some health food stores have the Brazil nuts and they're already out of the shell. So that right there gives you an insight. A few of those nuts on a regular basis add selenium in to your diet. But what I did not know is that selenium, when there's a deficiency of it, people can develop heart disease, macular degeneration, cataracts, exhaustion, their immune system will not function well, and they'll have frequently infections. And it also, as a deficiency, can cause a poor level, which may mean very high numbers, relative to cholesterol, both the HDL and the LDL. It is very significant in assisting your immune system. And it is absolutely amazing. Now, this is just a trace mineral. Not a bucket load of it, just a trace mineral makes this much difference. It protects the prostate gland for men, very, very much like an association. They call it the cousin of selenium, and that's zinc. Prostate gland improves sperm count and helps men with fertility problems. Now, were you ever educated about that by your doctor? I don't think so. Doctors are so overwhelmed with what they've got to learn. They have so much that has to be referred to. Most of them have very little nutritional training. It's not part of the curriculum. Well, that is changing slowly but surely. So we as consumers, we have to be the ones that are going to be alert and aware. Now, again, this is just one component. But Susie, in doing her research, found that people that had healthier levels, there's been research done on this, healthy levels of selenium in their blood work, they do very, very well. And they don't seem to age in the same way that other people age. And people, when the selenium level is low in their body, they have more pain, stiffness, inflammation, swelling, and a lack of mobility in their joints. But it's the thyroid that has the most benefit in many respects. And the thyroid, if you don't have selenium, your body doesn't make the enzyme glutathione peroxidase. That's a mouthful. These are points of information that when you come across it, you go, how come I didn't know about it? Well, there's a lot we've learned. So it is just something I thought I would bring up the information about it so that if you want to do some of your own research, you'll find out it's a very good antioxidant, and selenium supplements can really have a very, very positive effect in a body, especially if someone's going through treatments for cancer, and it is suggested that you talk to your doctor about selenium. Now, they may or may not have an understanding of it, but there's something I learned that I wish I had known, because there's a friend of mine that had polio, and post-polio, especially when you get into your senior years, and this lady is a senior, it hits very hard. It really is very incapacitating. Well, the University of Liverpool in 2004 concluded that increased selenium intake helped people clear the polio virus from their systems. Now, we may not think much about that, but when I think about the people that I have interviewed that have suffered from post-polio symptoms, and this friend of mine, knowing that information is incredible. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you. I think that because of what we have access to, being able to research, check out different sources, really investigate things, and you can do muscle kinesiology. And that is a tool that I think at some other time we'll have a deeper discussion about. But this is something that really makes a difference. And there are more and more people that in the medical field that are saying, let's see how we can work with the physiological chemistry of the individual. And Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine have done this for a very, very long time. They work with the individual. And it really does make a difference. It really does make a difference because we all, depending on our age, have different requirements. And our genetic packages are unique. Each of us are very, very individual in those expressions. And having something one size fit all, it doesn't work very well. Nope, we are becoming a lot wiser. And, you know, it may even be something with artificial intelligence after, let's say, maybe about 10 years. There's going to be that awareness that you will go in for a physical exam. You will be scanned from head to toe. Oh, by the way, full body scanners are available at this time, but they're extraordinarily expensive. I think a nurse told me it's something like $2,500 to $3,000 to get a full body scan where they examine you from the top of your head to the tip of your toes. And they will have thousands of images. So if you have anything that's going wrong with you, any suspicions, then they're going to be able to do that. Well, Star Trek, here we come. This is something that eventually it is going to come down in cost because primarily it's only the very wealthy people that can afford that. So this is something we're getting towards that slant because people are demanding it, preventative medicine. What can we do to keep ourselves strong and healthy and do it in a balanced way, in a harmonious way that is going to enable these physical chassis to last longer than we could ever imagine? Well, digressing from that, I wanted to talk about chocolate-dipped strawberries. And if you're chuckling when you're saying that, saying, Donna, really? After you just talked about nutrition? Hey, chocolate is a food as far as I'm concerned. And it's absolutely wonderful. And this is a recipe. This is so easy to do. It is so easy to do. And it's fun to do. If you're having a small group of people, and especially if it's a bunch of gals getting together, the guys are not so much into it, but the gals are. By golly, it is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. And this recipe was put together because this lady that I had on my show, she said she loves fondue. She said, I figured I would do something like a fondue, a cheese fondue. And she said, this is going to be a chocolate fondue, however. And she said, I would prepare strawberries ahead of time. And then my guest, because I'd put a long stick on it, my guest would sweep a strawberry through the melted chocolate, scooping up as much as they wanted or as little as they liked. And she said, it's fun to find out who likes white chocolate, who likes dark chocolate, who likes milk chocolate. And so what you're going to need are 12 bamboo skewers, and you're going to need 12 large fresh strawberries. Now, you could do this with smaller strawberries, but it's the big ones. You know, when people give gifts of chocolate-dipped strawberries, they're not little puny things. They're big strawberries. And you're going to need 6 ounces of good quality bittersweet dark chocolate. And, of course, it's going to be, you know, chopped up, so it'll melt easily. And then you're going to need 6 ounces of good quality white chocolate. And again, that is going to be chopped up. Now, these are the instructions. And you want to remember a couple of things. Number one, your strawberries have to be completely dry when you serve them, because any water on them will, what she calls, seize the chocolate. So you don't want water on those strawberries. They need to be very well drained. And these strawberries, chocolate-covered strawberries, are best on the day that you make it. So this is very important. And if you need to refrigerate them, after you've dipped them, let them harden on a clean paper towel. And dipped strawberries will keep for about 2 days in the freezer. And that chocolate insulates the strawberry, so it will keep its texture the way it should. And this is what she suggested. Pierce each strawberry through the hull. You want to keep the hull on there because it's pretty. And you want to have the bamboo skewer about 3/4 of the way through the strawberry, so it's not going to fall off into the chocolate. And you want to put them aside. And then in a microwave bowl, a medium one, or you can use a small pot on your stove. But with a microwave, you're going to heat the dark chocolate on high in 30-second intervals, and you got to stir in between, of course, until it becomes silky smooth and it's totally melted. And again, just remember with it on the stove, just remember you want to make sure you keep an eye on it. Don't just let it sit on the stove. Be sure you stir it, and it will melt pretty quickly. And I would say a medium-low heat. If you've been cooking at all, you'll figure it out. And then you want to do, in another bowl, the white chocolate, doing the same thing. Now, the white chocolate will melt faster than the dark chocolate does. So, again, you can do this on top of your stove. You also could use a double boiler. If you had a double boiler, put the chocolate in the upper portion and then the boiling water underneath. will create the heat to melt it in the double boiler. So as soon as the white chocolate is melted, you want to pour the dark chocolate onto a plate and then pour the white chocolate over the dark chocolate in a zigzag pattern. And then your strawberries, along with that dish of melted chocolate, you put it on the table so you can, and your other guest, can roll the skewered berries through the chocolate. And you can pick up both a little bit of the dark as well as the white. And of course, you're going to eat it right away. That's what makes it so magical. This is something that is so easy and so much fun to be able to do. And I don't know that this, you could double or triple this recipe if you were having a large crowd, and then you could serve the dipped strawberries. You know, you could fix this all up the day before you were going to serve it for a crowd of people. But it just is so colorful and so pretty, and it just is something that makes for a very memorable experience with the people that you are sharing it with. I think it's a fun idea. Well, also, too, I wanted to let you know about a couple of other things that I had come across. Have you ever, and I'm trying to remember the title of the book, and it's in the library. It's a mess. There's actually more than one. And it lists all the occupations of people in the United States. There are literally thousands and thousands of different environments for work. And most of us hear about just a minuscule amount. And that's not a surprise because it would take hours, maybe months, to go through all of the listings to give people an understanding that there's all kinds of work out there, all kinds of opportunities to express your talents and your abilities. Well, one of the areas that people have found that really was sort of disappeared, depending on where you were living, it disappeared because of the technologies that have evolved. And what is this that I'm trying to tell you about? It's about tracking. Now, if you're a kid and you liked cowboys and Indians and you read up on the Indians and how they could track the buffalo and how they could do this, that, and the other, well, tracking is a part of many, many different cultures. With modern technology, that was sort of thrown under the bus. And this occurred starting, I would say, maybe in the 60s, 70s. Well, do you know it's regained new interest? And there is so much that I learned just recently. And of course, I'm aware of that because I've interviewed people. And I can remember even as a kid reading about the people that could track people, animals. The Bushmen were able to do it very, very easily. And it has come back and it has really sparked the interest of many, many different people from different backgrounds. Now, if someone's from the Native American background and they had the opportunity to learn tracking from an elder, then they did it right in their living environment, even on the reservations. They would be able to track animals. This was something that was a part of their learning. And for the Native Americans, for thousands of years, it was part of their survival. Well, there's a man, his name is Mark Elbrock, E-L-B-R-O-C-H. He's a wildlife biologist, and this is a man who, he's Caucasian, and he is known for his tracking skills. In fact, he's written a number of books about tracking, and he's trained in South Africa, you know, all the way to here, and has been deeply involved with helping people to learn how to do the tracking. And I think that what has caused this to be interesting to people is that there are actual courses in various educational systems that allow people to explore this. And it was just absolutely amazing to me when I came across these details. And I said, okay, this is making a full circle where it was disavowed as something that was no longer needed. Well, that's proving not to be the case. People that want to be involved in wildlife biology have found that this is a skill that can really assist them, especially when they are doing research. Now, have you ever heard of the herpetologist? Mm-hmm. Very, very specialized area of knowledge about frogs, toads, salamanders. They check DNA of water. They investigate skunks, jackrabbits. There's just all kinds of things they get involved with. And the tracking is being researched and investigated and studied because people are finding that it's very useful. Now, how can it be useful? In Wisconsin, trackers are following wolves to prevent them from, you know, creating a problem with livestock and people. In my state of Washington, they're observing what they call the faunal footprints that are returning to the river valleys because we're removing dams in this state. And it's making a huge difference. There's been tremendous concern about salmon runs and other things. And then they say biologists have found it a very useful skill to trace antelope and other kinds of animals. They've traced lynx, wolverines across Montana. So there is this dynamic of interacting with nature, understanding knowledge that people just said, well, we don't need it anymore. They're saying it is a wonderful way to gain information. Now, there is an organization that for over 20 years, it's called Tracker Certification. They have conducted 700 formal field evaluations. And do you know that over 2,000 students signed up for that course? And it's from all kinds of people, all walks of life, all different ages, too. And it has made such a difference in their thinking, the world that they live in. It has made them appreciate that even more. It's so fascinating. I'll use that word again. And how much we don't know. And when we're open to learning, how we are able to, with or without technology, learn how to make the adaptations in our lives, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what your age is or your gender, it doesn't make any difference. We live in, as I say in my newsletter, a Renaissance period where exploration is encouraged, where learning from the past is encouraged. You don't need to use everything from the past, but you take the wisdoms that are left behind. And there are so many talented people that you can come to know that can assist you in so many ways. Sometimes all we have to do is ask, gee, can you teach me what you know? And you may find they'll be more than happy to accommodate you. I know that we're just about out of time. Donna Sebo here. I'm glad you were able to join me. Won't you tell your friends about the show? And don't forget, next week, for those of you in the state of Washington, I'm going to be at the Psychic Spectrum as the keynote speaker on the 6th of August. And I'm looking forward to that. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Dolly Parton is someone that has made a life for herself, because she was not afraid to step into who she is, and she is going strong, and she will probably be entertaining people even when she chooses to leave this earth. Keep her in mind when you feel a little bit discouraged. If she can do it, well, the rest of us should pay attention, because we might be able to do too. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.